You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev, the number one Chevrolet dealer in Canada since 2015, based on Dealer Raider's customer review site. Stop in, say hi. Right now, 20% off MSRP cash credit on select vehicles. That's Lakewood Chev.
Get to Workout Wednesday, brought to you by Custom Fit. Want to look good, eat good, feel good? Go to customfit.ca. Set up a program that works for you. Jeff Woods joins us. The International Triathlon Union event was just here this past weekend at Horlock Park. The Edmonton Marathon is coming up in about just under a three-week time. And Jeff, want to talk about, what did you think of your race in the five in your leg of the 5K in the triathlon? How did you feel you did?
Well, I'll tell you, Gregor, like the event that you and I participated in, obviously a team event, and it was a relay setup. So we did a specific leg. I did the 5 kilometer run, and it was okay. I mean, obviously I was undertrained. I haven't done a lot of running over the course of the last few years. So I took a very conservative approach. I would run for 4 minutes and walk for 1 minute. And, you know, here's the message I want to convey to listeners on that particular approach. You know, like I spontaneously decided I was going to participate in this event and then dragged you into it. But, you know, we had some fun and I knew that I was undertrained, but I knew if I took a conservative approach, I could still participate and we had some fun. So I think you can go into these events too, as long as you don't take yourself too seriously, maybe take an approach like that and it still works.
Were you a little overcautious with that? Like, do you think you just could have ran the whole time?
You know, I probably could have, and I think I'm probably strong enough to do it, Jason. But I'll tell you one thing with running and pushing too hard when you are slightly undertrained. Hamstrings are notorious for giving out and being weak for runners. And Andre DeGrasse, like you were just mentioning, I heard in the opening, it's pretty easy to strain it, and then you're out for an extended period of time. So, I mean, I want everybody to go out and give it their best effort, but I think you have to let common sense prevail would be my call on that.
Okay, no, that's fair. Now, recovery from endurance events, and there was a lot of people doing all three of them, and then, of course, there's a lot of marathon runners out there now who are getting set for the Edmonton Marathon. A lot of local people get set to take part in it. And, you know, delayed onset muscle soreness, DOMS, as they call it, is definitely a major one. What are some things to do prior to a race, even for people who have trained properly, to limit DOMS after, you know, endurance or a triathlon?
Well, so here's the thing. First thing, I want to just talk briefly about why our muscles get sore. So it could be a number of things. It could be that you didn't do enough training and the muscles are just weak. You didn't have a good strength training component, for example. And then as a result, your muscles don't tolerate and generate force very effectively. The other thing to understand is that our muscles get sore primarily when so like through eccentric action. So as the muscle lengthens and it's under stress for an extended period of time, that seems to be the thing that creates the muscle soreness. Now, another thing that research is sort of uncovering now is just that the fascial layer, and that's the layer of tissue that sits underneath the skin, but it sits over top of the muscle. It sort of encapsulates the muscle. And for listeners, like if you're barbecuing a piece of pork tenderloin, for example, and you've seen like that white milky sort of skin over top of the meat, that's your fascial layer. So now scientists are speculating that the fascial layer, if that gets knotted up, it can have quite an effect on how we feel and that soreness after. So the things that would be kind of important to understand is like where the soreness comes from and to have a good training program in place at the front end. And then beyond that, make sure that you're going to give yourself enough time. Like trying to rush into these events with only like 4 or 6 weeks of training probably doesn't make sense. Like you need probably like a minimum of 16 weeks in some cases up to a year of properly periodized training. And with that in mind, you're going to build up a tolerance to accommodate the stress in these endurance events.
Now, what can we do to speed up the healing process for sore muscles?
Well, interestingly, like you're going to be sold a number of different therapies that apparently speed up the process. But unfortunately, Gregor, the best treatment is time, to be quite honest. And you can take part in a lot of different therapies that will mask the symptoms, but they won't expedite the process of healing. So the best thing that somebody could do if they're really sore after one of these events, you know, start to walk or just low-intensity movement of some sort. Get your body temperature up. And within a few minutes, you're going to feel pretty good. Number two, massage therapy can be really effective to sort of reduce the pain a little bit. But again, you're going to make the symptoms feel better. You're not going to expedite the healing of the broken down fibers or muscle tissue. And I would also recommend, if you're going with massage, don't go into a really deep tissue massage, because that too traumatizes the muscle tissue, and then you're going to need time to recover from that. The other thing might be like ice baths. You'll see like a lot of professional teams, they have their athletes jump into an ice bath. I can tell you this, connective tissues, tendons, cartilage, so on, they already get a reduced blood flow. You start to put an athlete in a really cold ice bath, it restricts the blood flow even more, and it actually slows down the healing process. Now, with that said, you could have like a cold water bath, which is not as cold as the ice bath, and keep that temperature around 10 degrees Celsius and do like the cold water bath for like 10 to 20 minutes. There's some science that sort of looks at how that can improve like an endurance athlete's ability to recover to do training runs. It would be no good for a strength athlete making muscles cold. Like if you wanted to get stronger and you're engaged in a really aggressive weight training program, both of those scenarios probably not good. But the cold water bath seems to help endurance athletes for running between running bouts. The other thing, saltwater bath, we get sold that therapy quite a bit. And the theory there is that the magnesium in the salt will help to flush waste product from stressed muscles. There's no scientific evidence to support that claim. A warm water bath will deliver exactly the same outcome in terms of you just feeling better. And then you don't have to worry about drying out your skin. So I don't think you need to do the saltwater bath. And the last thing I talk about, like foam rolling or using some sort of like a ball, like a lacrosse ball, and doing myofascial release, where you lay on a foam roller, for example, to kind of work out any knots in the fascial layer or in the muscle. Now, that seems to work at some level. And again, for a lot of people that take part in these types of scientific studies, sometimes it's kind of subjective, and some people don't feel the benefits. But the advantages of the foam rolling and myofascial release technique is that it puts stress on the muscle tissues, but doesn't put stress on the connective tissue. So you maintain good joint stability using that particular therapy. So it could prove to be beneficial.
Jeff Woods from Custom Fit joins us. So for the people, the death race is coming up this weekend. You got the marathon, you just had the triathlon. How long should people wait then to get back out and start training again, or just being active?
Okay, well, that's a good question. So, you know, what's interesting with that, many people think, Gregor, that if they don't get back right away, they're going to lose all their aerobic fitness, they're going to lose their run capacity. But if you looked again at hard science data on this type of stuff, I mean, until like 14 to 21 days of completely sedentary behavior, you're going to have your aerobic capacity drop off a little bit. It's not going to drop off 100%, but it starts to fall off in small percentage points. So after 14 to 21 days, you might lose a little bit, but you should not worry psychologically that you're going to lose your training base. And that recovery, if you allow it to take place for the 14 to 21 days after an endurance event, you're probably going to come back a whole lot stronger. But after that 3-week period, I would say in week number one, after the 3 weeks of rest, you could introduce like walks, for example, for 20 to 30 minutes a day. With obviously improving good healthy food intake, make sure that you're hydrated properly. Then in the second week, after the 21 days, you could start to introduce maybe 20 to 30 minute walk runs, or maybe just 20 minute runs, depending on your fitness level, and provided there's no injury patterns, like no joint inflammation in the hips or low back. And then by week number three, after the 21 day period of rest, you could start to do maybe 5 kilometers. Like you could start to do your distance runs. Forget the timing part. You could actually start to work back towards distance. Now, everything I'm talking about, obviously, if you have developed an injury from your endurance event, none of this timing makes sense. You may have to take an extended period of time off to let your injuries heal before you could navigate back into some sort of training program.
So are you taking 3 weeks off?
Well, in my little 5K run, and I just want to be clear on this, there was a mascot black gorilla, a guy in a costume running just as fast as I was. So you know that I wasn't working that intently, and I don't think I need to take that 21 days off. I could go back at it.
Oh, no, that's good. I was hoping that was your answer because I was like, feel free to try next time.
How did you feel? Now, when you did your 20K bike ride, did you feel you had more gas in the tank, or did you train appropriately in your mind?
Well, like anything, you probably could have trained more. But a 20K bike, it's a lot different than running just because it's less taxing on your body, I find.
Yeah,
there's not the pounding factor. The only thing I should have done better is I should have warmed up before my race better. I probably warmed up way better at home. I forgot my foam roller that morning. I'd kind of gotten used to how I'd roll out on certain things. So I found, because I've never, on all the rides when I did training, when I would come out and it would be a flat surface and then there was a gradual hill for me, which was good. But to do this race, literally after 400 meters, you hit Emily Murphy Hill, which is a pretty good test. And, you're going from 0 to 100 right away. So in hindsight, I would have warmed up. If I had warmed up better, I think that would have helped me. I just found that it kind of got me into the race a lot quicker, but I found that my knee was a little sore after the race when I'd never had any soreness training. And I knew exactly why, just because I wasn't as warm as I should have been.
Right. So let me ask you this. So because of the weather, because it was a bit cool when we rode down to the park and it was kind of drizzling a little bit, do you think that played any effect for you? Like just the temperature being a bit cool as well?
No, because I usually train in the morning anyway. I don't like biking when it's super hot, so I was always training before 9 o'clock in the morning most days anyway. So I didn't. Once the rain stopped, I felt it was kind of normal temperature. I didn't feel any colder than I used to.
All right. Well, so one more question, Gregor. So when you were trying to ride up the hill on that course, did you feel like you were just at your maximal, like working a threshold, like it was too much, or did you not really feel like that throughout?
No, only on the hill on the way up, and probably only like the last quarter of the hill. I was like, wow, I really got to bear down here to get up it. But, I have my odometer, so I look at it and I kind of see, I wanted to maintain a certain kilometer rate of speed going up the hill. So I tried, if I get to the halfway and I was still at 17, then I want to try to maintain that. And I got down to like, 16.1. So it was close to what I wanted. So it's like anything. I never train on that hill, right, other than doing it once. So it's, I think, like, and you can train lots, but if you don't train hills, you're not going to do as well on a hill as a flat surface.
Absolutely. Your training has to be specific at some level. So were you riding in a pack at all, or were
you
pretty much on your own?
Well, you're not allowed to in that. There's no drafting allowed in a triathlon. But I don't ride in packs. I've never done it. I don't trust myself. So
it can be dangerous.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it. So, no, I was at times it felt like I was in a pack because I was just getting passed by the guys who had their tri bikes and then like the legitimate triathletes. So I kind of chuckled at that a few times. So, yeah, it was always a good one where you think you're going really fast. Like the one guy passed me going down the hill, which was the only time it's kind of worked. I was like, man, I'm going 52 kilometers. This guy comes by on a tri bike like I was standing still. I was like, holy doodle.
So you knew you were going 52K down the Emily Murphy Hill?
Yeah. Well, I have the odometer on. So that's what the bike said I was going. So I assume it's right.
Well, here, and I'll be brief too today. So Plakas and I were talking at the studio about the top end speed of some of these world-class triathletes, like the men. And like through the Tour of California, for example, and some other places in Sweden, these guys were talking about reaching speeds in some of the mountain ranges of like 110 to 120 kilometers an hour going downhill. Now, one of the guys, talked on video camera about how after the bike gets up over 100K an hour, like mentally, like he got a little freaked out, like they're worried about crashing. And aside from their helmets, there's not a lot of protection on a bike. I cannot imagine wiping out at 100K an hour going downhill.
No thanks. I wouldn't want to do it at all. So one thing I did, I got to ride a tri bike and I did a lap the next day on a tri bike. and my lap was a minute and a half faster. Exact same person, just a different bike that's more aerodynamic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you get a good bike. If you're someone who's actually going to get serious about it, then obviously you've got to get the – and I have a nice road bike. I have a Trek road bike, but it's not the same as a tri bike, I learned.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a little bit quicker for sure. Good experience. I would definitely do that again next year and, you know, obviously train a little bit differently for it. But it was a very enjoyable experience.
Yeah, well, you have a year to learn how to run the whole time without stopping, okay?
Thanks, Gregor. You know what? With you as my coach, I'm going to aspire.
Oh, yeah, we're gonna reverse roles here. I have no problem training you how to run. So that'll be fantastic. That'll be fantastic. So, and feel free to get some looser clothes next time, too. So
I thought those clothes were very appropriate. I had comments along the run that I looked good.
Yeah. Okay, Borat. We'll chat with you next week.
All right, pal. Take care.